You shall close prison arrest, till that the nature of your fault be known to the Venetian state. Come, bring him away.
It's off to you a word or two before you go. I've done the state some service, and they know it, no more of that. I pray you in your letters, when you shall these unlucky deeds relate, speak of me as I am, nothing extenuate, nor set down aught in malice. Then must you speak of one that loved not wisely, but too well. Of one not easily jealous, but being wrought, perplexed in the extreme, of one whose hand, like the base Indian, threw a pearl away, richer than all his tribe. Of one whose subdued eyes, albeit unused to the melting mood, drops tears as fast as the Arabian trees, their medicinal gum. Set you down this, and say besides that in Aleppo once, where a malignant and a turbaned Turk beat a Venetian, introduced the state, I took by the throat the circumcised dog and smote him thus!
Oh, bloody period. All that spoke is marred.
I kiss thee ere I kill thee. No way but this. Killing myself to die upon a kiss.
This did I fear. I thought he had no weapon, for he was great of heart.
Spartan dog, more fell than anguish, hunger, or the sea. Look, on the tragic loading of this bed, this is thy work. The object poisons sight. Let it be hid. Graziano, keep the house and seize upon the fortunes of the Moor, for they succeed to you. To you, Lord Governor, remains the censure of this hellish villain. The time, the place, the torture only force it. Myself will straight aboard, and to the state this heavy act with heavy heart relate.
I don't know about that fifth act.
You gonna cut it?
Well, I think that among us we might find a way to render it unrecognizable. Which could arguably be called adaptation. But maybe not. I mean, I've been having this running battle with this idea of reparative shit. If I have Desdemona say man instead of Moor, am I being reparative, or am I just giving the story a way forward that Shakespeare's telling would not actually have? If I remove the line, threw a pearl away richer than all his tribe, because I don't believe that Othello thinks anything is richer than all his tribe, is that reparative, or is that taking license with his perspective that allows him to be something that an audience of like of a similar mind, certainly black people, would more identify with? I don't know. They're all sort of big questions, and several times in this reading, because people go deeper and deeper and things become apparent to me. They will become unapparent, perhaps in the next reading, but apparent in this one. These moments occur where I think, well, what if? Am I fixing something if I change that someone looks at it and says, no, you need to leave it all that, I mean, I don't think the toxicity is removed, by that sort of work. But I don't know, people have strange notions about Shakespeare, so. I like this reading a lot. The changes are really marked from one to the next. And I think the next one, particularly because there's going to be more than a week in between, is going to be interesting as well. There's a version of Verdi's Otello, not the Zeffirelli film with Placido Domingo, but I think there's a stage where, I don't know if it's the Met, I tried to look it up, but if anybody has time, you might want to look at it, because it's so much, there's so much fucking melodrama in this play, right? Which the opera allows, and that I cannot fucking abide. I'm. It's lovely in the opera. It makes sense, and it also gives people the performers in the opera. The music gives them opportunity to feel and emote. Like the camera is just on them feeling, while the music is swelling, while we're listening to the music, while we're carried away with the power of the music, which we don't have recourse to. We don't have the luxury of in this play, and it is about figuring out how to either use that language which played so well to Shakespeare's audience, or be rid of it, because you cannot contemporize it. It doesn't work. How to do that? I will also find which version of this it is, and along with information about Blessed Unrest Project, I will send that around. So, you know, in the next several weeks, if you have a chance to look at that, it'll give you something to think about and to talk about. Because I think it really is, in many respects, a beautiful rendition of the play. It makes a better opera than a play. I'm trying to figure out what Rodrigo is. How do we get him to Cyprus in the, you know, for Shakespeare, you can just take a guy. It's like me asking you to come to fucking Afghanistan with me. You know, I'm shipping out. You want to come? I'll get you on the plane. You know, and it doesn't work. And I don't know quite what he is. I'm gonna have to figure that out. And how he gets into rooms where he shouldn't necessarily be if he's not military. He can be military, but then that changes language and things.
I think he's clearly not military.
I think so.
Their whole hierarchy situation. Yeah. He's outside of that thing.
And thus, you know, he seems to be in every room that he's not supposed to be in. You know, Yago turns around and says, hey, how you doing? You know?
He's like very, I kind of see him like blending into the scenery. He's like kind of poking out of the shadow, and Yago's like, fuck, like, who do you think you are again?
Yeah, but what does it, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
But what is he? Who is he that allows him to do that? You know, I don't know. I'm working on this idea that we spoke briefly of you know, this sense of love for him. Love is, I think, as Iago says, you're calling it love, but it's this other thing. And does he actually know that? Does he actually buy that?
Has he had something that resembles something else in his life?
Has he had? Good question. Has it always been some form of this thing?
It doesn't strike me that he's had a different version based on what his experience, the experience he shares with other people, what he's going through. He's very alone. He only ever talks to Iago or like goads Cassio. Every scene is here.
And I think that makes him an identifiable figure in many respects. You know, somebody who I can have empathy for. Well, that comic idiot that bounces around most productions, I don't really have any empathy for, you know.
My friend, I was telling, he's an actor, writer, director, I was telling him about, I'm working on this I'm like doing these readings of Othello with this group of people, or awesome. And he, before I say almost anything about what we're doing, he's like, you know, everyone in, and I railed against this opera, is this, everyone in Othello is either evil or an idiot. And I've always wanted to see a production that is like slapstick comedy. And I'm like, why? This is like the antithesis of what we're all talking about. But especially Burr and I were talking the other day, we're like, what is the humanity in all things? And I'm like, so as an artist, like, what is your desire in shrinking for comedy the scope of humanity? I mean, he worked on the play a long time ago and hasn't read it, I'm thinking, many years, but either way, it's like, everybody's evil. So it's like, so what's going on with Amelia? He's like, well, she's dumb. And I'm like, I think you're right, man. I don't think, but in terms of this, like, this idea of like, what is the identifiable characteristic of, because when we were talking about this, we were like, what's going on here with, like, how do you bring the full humanity? How's this guy gonna like, I can take that guy. I'm a little scared of that guy, but like, also covetous of what he has. When in some scenes, he's like, only got a line.
He's only what?
He's only got a line to do it. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're fucking tricking me. And he's like, no, I'm not tricking you. Here's why. I'm like, okay. Okay. Like,
I think
you're my lifeline. You're all I got. You're all I got.
That's the space in between the bodies and space. That's the easier work, right? Than trying to find something to do with a lot of this language. That's the fun stuff that we could figure out in staging and being, but you know, just physical being. You know, I don't worry so much about that as I worry about.
I think this speaks though to what you said earlier about, is it reparative to cut and to change things? And I think if they're coming from the same, if the thrust of what you're trying to do comes from the same place, which is to humanize these people, then fucking A, yes you can. And not that we shouldn't discuss everything. I mean, I think it's a case by case thing, but I think if that's the intention.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I was just suggesting that they're, I wouldn't even call them purists, but people who want the play to sort of live in infamy. That if you fix it, it can no longer tenant, you know. And
I'm not making this for them.
You're not making it for them. You know.
I mean, they should see it.
The question about reparative, like, everybody cuts Shakespeare. Like, almost nobody does an unabridged version of Shakespeare.
That's a little different. Just cutting.
Right. But why is cutting? I mean, once you're cutting, you are adapting in some capacity, right? You are changing the story in some capacity, no matter what your intention is. So why is it such an? I don't know what the answer to the question is, but when you're saying change more for man, like something in me went like, oh, that's a, like something in me from my training or something went like, oh no, that's a big shift. But why is it different?
Well, like, that is a big shift. I mean, changing more for man is a big, which is like the point that you were making, that is a big shift, because that there's something in her saying more as opposed to man.
Yes.
That is a big thing. But, so I understand that. I understand we like, yeah, where do we...
But what is the line between...
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's a shift in like the magnitude. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a big magnitude,
yeah.
But it's like, what's the difference between that and... Everybody who's ever produced, almost everybody who's ever produced Shakespeare, cutting so much of the play to fit it into the story they want to tell, or putting on some layer of modernity to put it into the package that they want to tell.
I think the difference of everybody in the room, I think, is that, like, I think you're after, because, you know, we've seen productions of Othello. You know, they always try to put some sort of spin on it that's not there, I think. And I think you're trying to preserve what's there, the story that's there, but how do we tell it efficiently and effectively without the fat?
Mm-hmm.
It
feels problematic in a way where there's a lot of shrapnel that, like,
hits
everything, and it feels like what we're trying to do is to get really specific about, like, What are the problematic moments here? What about this relationship is like, am I fetishizing you?
Right.
You know, like
right.
That's
and I always
specific.
Think about the fetishizing of each other. Like, are they Yeah, mm. And the fact that she calls him more. I mean, see, we see it, you know, we see that shit in real life. Like, I see that with some of my friends, and I'm like, what the fuck, you know? Like, my friends, that, my African-American friends that only date white women, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, you know, do you, but why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, there's something going on, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, there's something there. And I'm like, nah, man, I just, nothing, like, there's something. And then I see, you know, white female friends that only date black men, and I'm like, there's something about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And is that, you know, what is going on with that? Like, why did Desdemona shun all of those? And is it just? I mean, personally, you know, I had a tough. My wife didn't do this, but you know, I was like, before we got married, I had like papers, like paper lists of why I'm marrying this woman, which I think you probably should do anyway, right? But I was doing it because she's white, right? I was doing it like, what about me? Why am I doing this? Am I doing, because I love this person dearly and completely, or is there something that that society's put on me that's saying, oh, she's better than, you know, which sucks, right? But is that what's going on?
Yeah. I feel like that question of like what society puts on it is kind of underneath all of this, of the reparative or not, and why we try to preserve. Because I have to admit, even reading through it, there are times I was like, oh, it's so nice to actually read the entire thing, because then I feel like I'm actually engaging with the story Shakespeare wrote and also how it reflects the times in the society he was writing it for and reflecting. And I feel like, I don't know, that's part of that conversation, because I had the same response that you even hinted at with the I would trade for my entire tribe, and I was like, that sounds really false, but that's like a insanely huge statement to make to me as, you know, black man, whatever. But there's something about how do we figure out who these people are as people and what it actually would take to get us to the point of saying these things or doing these things, mm-hmm. without being able to say, no, this is the full text. And maybe because I'm used to cuts of everything, so it's always, oh, well, this is just this version of it, but it's never really engaging with, like, a piece as, like, a historical, like, I don't know the noun to apply to it, but as whether it's a historical text or a record or whatever it is, which I think then stops the conversation short that we've even been having. Because it's just easy to say it's a cut, or I don't really know what was there or what's been changed.
Sure.
And I'm not even going in one way or the other as far as repair.
But this has been changed, right?
Yes.
So we have to, this ain't the first folio.
Well, yes.
You know what I mean?
Right, even then.
And people translated
then,
this.
That's right. Yeah.
And people translated this, so why can't we translate it to, you know what I mean? Like, who says they got it right?
No.
Yeah.
Well,
they were doing it from their own shit.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, it's cultural / societal pressures tradition, pedagogy, all kinds of shit. You know, that are in my mind as I'm listening. And I think what Darrell is saying is ultimately we do us, right? We
right.
do. We move forward as artists, and it doesn't matter. I hate to put that out of our heads and just do the work. And I get that. See where we go. I think something Zach that you said, Zach, which was people sort of wanting to see the laugh track version. We do now. I mean, it has become this laughable. Most audiences call, go this play to laugh. I just wrote a blog post about how it's like. We used to go to midnight movies of Mommy Dearest, right? This movie about Joan Crawford's daughter. Yeah. I don't know if you ever see it. You need to go and have a look at this thing. But it was Faye Dunaway playing Joan Crawford and her relationship with her daughter. Her adopted daughter. What was it?
It was
adopted daughter.
Yeah.
Who she treated horribly, apparently.
It's
right?
so
good. Yeah.
And And we watch it because we sit there and go, oh no, she did not. Yeah. And that's exactly the reason most of these people, I think come to see the Bible. The productions most recently over the past 10 years, 15 years that I have seen, that's certainly the energy, spectacle.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing you're citing, is that about like, is the laughter, do you think about the, I don't know what this is, it's about the separation from like, we're able to like, really go far away from like, that's not reality, of ha ha ha, what a funny like reflection of like 115% of humanity. Is that the thing you're talking about? The mommy dearest thing. Is that like where does the laughter come from? Is it because it's like in farce?
Yeah, but I've always wondered that, right? Like, did anybody see Slave Play in here?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did you see Slave Play?
Yeah.
Like, this is not funny. You know, what's happening, and they played it like a farce. So it seems like, yeah, I'm like, what?
People get so uncomfortable.
Yeah, but get a fucking uncomfortable.
I mean,
right?
absolutely.
Yeah.
We're also socialized to make fun of the things that are different or lesser. I mean, even the conversation we had earlier, we don't speak truth because we live in a society that punishes you for being wrong.
Sure.
When you're a child, you do something wrong,
yes.
You say I'm sorry, or you have to do something to make up for it. So we're constantly trying to avoid like owning who and what we are. And I think that the same way, like it says it in here, he's a stranger here and everywhere. That's the fodder for laughter, for comedy, because we can say what we want. And I think that there is like a weird, no, it's just become normal, and I think it's to the point where it's not entertainment if there's also weight that we have to walk away with or something.
There was one thing you asked at the beginning of this reading, and it was so great to switch.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
Really, yeah. You did such beautiful work. It was so just so interesting to see Amelia through your person and who you are. And one of the things I was struck with, one, just by world events, Afghan women, the Taliban, the question of like what's happening with the freedom that they've been experiencing, what are they going back to, and all of that has been in my brain lately in thinking about the female characters in this play. One of the things I thought was so interesting about what I was observing in your work today was that it seemed like Amelia had to learn and give herself permission and try and figure out how to speak out. And it was happening sort of like by degrees and sort of these like fits and bursts where it would sort of come out and then be like, no, I can't. No, I have to say, no, I can't say this thing. And that just felt, it just is just taking me to not here. Because I don't feel that the women in this play are from here and now at all. They do not feel like they are from here and now. They feel like they come from another time, another culture with another set of rules.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Societal rules.
So. What do we do if we are all looking through a more contemporary lens? How does that change how those women manifest?
It's a really good question. I don't know.
I thought it changed today for me.
It did change some.
Yeah, I thought, like today, I thought, you like it felt like she knew what she was doing. Even in that speech, like, the all the world speech, like it kind of felt like there was a little of Amelia saying, like, I know what I've done. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought the women today were, all of them were stronger. Even you, I remember there was something that happened, oh, after I hit you, and then you said something, and then after the striking, right, I felt that you and I no longer had a relationship, where I haven't felt that way before, where I was like, I couldn't, it was hard for me to look at you.
She said, it's like a line, something like, I didn't deserve that, or something.
Yeah.
Like, this time she...
Yeah, it was different, right, right. And it was different. It wasn't, like, it wasn't Desdemona, like, well, like we think in Othello, like, she's still, I'm in love with my husband, and that's it. I felt like, oh, the line was crossed.
Less of a sense
yeah.
of appeasement
yeah.
after.
Yeah.
You know.
What struck
and
me?
I felt that with all, with everyone, yeah.
I thought her silence after the strike was the thing that hit me. She
was,
she just waited.
Waiting for you to make eye contact with me.
Yeah.
Sarah, what do you think? I was listening this time when Amelia says, okay, so I found this thing. My husband has wanted me to give it to him. I've got it. But I know my mistress wants this. I'll make a copy,
mm-hmm.
and I'll give him this thing.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah,
and then, you know, she doesn't wait, right? Because he comes in, and I was thinking there, what happens in the staging to make it clear that she decides for whatever reason she has to make another choice? She could have waited. She could have given him to him tomorrow, the next week, right? But doesn't. And I'm wondering what can we show?
I think it's in his entrance line, because it's not, hi wife, how are you doing? It's, what the fuck are you doing here?
She doesn't, yeah, it's out. He
yeah.
sees it.
Like the
Yaku
fact that she, that she is standing on a street by herself is a problem for him. What are you doing here? And I mean, in a weird way, I come from a, I'm only one generation removed from a society that in which women have no status. I'm half Amish. And when I visited them, I was just utterly struck by how silent the women were most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they were alone together.
Mm-hmm.
Or unless they were amongst children. And it occurs to me, like Heather, you were saying, this is a world in which women have to have chaperones, or they have to be together, but a woman by herself is immediately suspect.
And I think it's interesting because I think that it is modern.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. It's now, I know people in my town that have relationships like that, my small town I came from. And I think that's what's so fucking shitty about humanity and why Othello could be really cool to redo.
Yeah.
Because it's all still fucking true.
Like,
it's
I found myself true. Thinking for the first time today, like, oh God, Brabantio's one of those guys who'd have to take his daughter to a fucking chastity ball.
100?
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
She's got the promise ring, she wore the white
yep.
dress,
yep.
the pearl, the jewel,
yep.
all that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, I don't think
but just to play devil's advocate. To play devil's advocate for that, I mean, if we're talking about the world, then that would have been, his daughter would have been more than just a misogynistic symbol to him. This would have represented his best chance at creating a union. This was an economic thing as much as it was just a gender thing. I mean, this is part of that world
She's
as
a
well.
Thing. She's also a thing.
But it's that this
She's
is
political.
This is the way that I can ensure a union that I can then make whatever children that I have after this, whatever your children are, that this is going to set them up for the future. And that's like an inescapable part of this world as well. I mean, it's this, for my mind, this play is so dominated in this country, especially by the lens of race, that we miss the lens of class. And there is so much stuff that goes on in terms of class, in terms of Emilia and Iago being a very, very different class than Cassio,
mm-hmm.
than Othello being a very different class than Cassio, the dukes, like all of the, even those like minor characters that are in Venice, they're the most important characters, they're the characters that we're working for. They're the most important people in terms of status in this play. And that's just, it's a funny lens to kind of see this world through as well.
But if Othello were white and married Desdemona, I think he would have been proud.
1,000%.
You know what I mean? So
sure.
I don't think
Othello's a catch. Othello's like,
yeah.
dang,
yeah.
dang.
Unless he wanted her married to the Duke of Florence.
Florence, unless he wanted her married to one of the Pope's men or something. I think that us all being soldiers, we're still servants, despite being like really great at what we inside of our world. It's like that there is an idea that Desdemona could come from a completely like almost untouchable caste that we're not privy to. That we're all kind of people that are working our way up in this world, that as much as you, Othello is a person like that, Cassio is a person like that, Rodrigo, well, maybe actually Rodrigo sounds like he's kind of a landed gentleman that's trying to sort of come into it from, Rodrigo even seems like a different class than the three of us. So there's this like, I wonder if there's a sense of us being like, we're soldiers, yes, but we're also servants to the Duke of Venice, you know? And like, and yes, he probably would have been prouder, but I wonder like, all right, well, what does a general mean? Is a general also a nobleman? Is a general like, or is it just like, okay, go beat the Turks, come back, we'll give you some more, you know, we'll give you a little more treasure and things like that? Or is it that these leaps in occupational status also give us more societal status? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like the more we kind of like, we level, and that's part of the, I think, the competition between the three of us, that like, that there's a sense, yes, I want to be as good of a lieutenant as I can, but also like, I want to have a better house. I want, you know, I want my kids to go to the University of St. Peter's. Like, there's a real desperation, even when I'm with Bianca, it's like, yeah, like, fuck, okay, we have fun in the bedroom, but I don't want people to see me with a courtesan, you know, or somebody that, like, is going to, because I am still trying to show myself off as, like, well, I'm a catch, you know, I'm, like, I'm the lieutenant, and, you know, my stock is only rising, and so there's this sense of, like, class it was the first time that my point is, the first time that I took such a heavy dose of classicism in this play. And like that felt like a very dominant theme, but I was like, oh wow, all these people are really fucking contending with that. And I would suspect that in Shakespeare's time, he was really contending with that as well. It was like, that would have been such a dominant structure under which he would have written this play. It's that sense of like, trying to achieve, like, and didn't Shakespeare, by the end of his life, he became like a minor gentleman, or like,
yeah, he earned a coat of arms, yeah,
which would have been a huge deal to him, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is like, I've been working my ass off doing this thing, and finally I get this coat of arms, which then means I can then pass this to my kids, right? Which then means that like, that we've moved just a little bit past the bourgeoisie, that we're somewhat like minor landed people, you know. So that would have, I feel like that would have been such a that feels like a very dominant strain in this play as well.
And it does kind of, and the action of the play does put the lie to the idea of meritocracy functioning, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm always struck by the beginning of the play. Othello seems to me to have really come to identify with his successes and to believe that means something in the world, that stands for something. His confidence in the outcome when Brabantio and all the rest come to challenge the marriage. And he really lit my, and it's my place, my title, and my perfect soul, right? So putting perfect soul in that with the rest seems to me to suggest, well, once I've accomplished this, no one can take it away from me. And that's not true. Like even the fact that, just like what you said at the end of the play, before anybody knows anything about what's happened on the island, they're like, okay, his job is done, we're going to put this other guy in charge, because he's actually next on our pecking order, not Othello. Or like the fact that, it's a weird point, but like Cassio believes in his reputation, and then can kind of not even believe that he's lost it instantaneously, or that you could lose control of yourself if something as stupid as drink. Like anything can be taken away from you in an instant, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a place that is really bearable for us to think about living in all the time, I think.
Yeah,
but it's actually society. There's that line, I think might be my favorite line, the opinion, the sovereign mistress of effects. And it's really that across the board. I think that's the classism, it's the race, it's the like gender issues, it's all about the most commonly held opinion of all the things.
Right.
This today, I actually have to say, and I don't know if it's because of the you guys playing with the soliloquies and stuff, but today it was like, oh, it is very different when I'm able to access the fact that Iago is also having fits, that someone can say were seizures, when they're not soliloquies given to the audience and stuff, or even Brabantio in the beginning, he like basically has the same kind of fit that Othello's having when dealing with heartbreak. It's just that what everyone is told about them is different, and the commonly held opinion of the Moor and all of that, even the relationship stuff, it's because the commonly held opinion of this choice in partner is one that doesn't increase your status, which I still think goes to the classism and all of that. But there is this thing about, it's just about what we think about it.
Yeah.
Because that's actually like the substance and the fault of society. It's just about shared belief and opinion.
Yeah, I think it's such a daunting task. You know, I think of like any story that I read or any movie that I watch or play, it's such a daunting task to you know what I mean, to make sense of it all to the point where an audience sees it and is like, okay, got it. Because, you know, it's like I hate to harp on slave play, but you know what I mean? It's like a certain audience loved that play, loved it, which was confusing to me. So that's what I mean, like, how do you tell this story to, you know, by the end of this, where everybody, where as an audience, we say, okay, that's why she did what she did. Oh, that's why he did what she did. That's why, like, we get it.
Yeah.
And do we, you know, how do we do that without the backstory? This is why Iago mm-hmm. did what he did.
Well, we certainly create backstory,
yeah.
right? I mean, how much of it we can impart to an audience
right.
is a question, but I know I know that the more of it there is, the more chance of it coming across in the story. You know, if you get into the minutia of what these characters did prior to the first moment of the play, you know, more and more of it will come across. We cannot worry about them getting everything that we are trying to put across, but at the same time, nobody gets everything that Shakespeare is trying to put across. And in fact, I am now, you know, deep in the scholarship, you know, people are pointing at all sorts of stuff that I say no contemporary audience is ever going to get that, no matter what you do, right? And so it isn't my job to worry so much about it. The class thing is an interesting case in point, because there's so much scholarship around this being a play about that, more than it's a play about race or anything else. And I think based on their, you know, looking at that perspective, that, you know, it may be true. They make good points. Whether or not that plays, my parts, my title, and my perfect soul shall manifest me rightly. Yeah, I guess Othello thinks that. But again, would he say that, you know, now, or would we see it? If we were watching a movie about similar issues, would a character say something? Pompous like that, or would we just intuit, you know, that from what they do? And that gets back to my issue about the melodrama, right? They say everything,
mm-hmm.
you know. And if you take the words out of their mouths, if you don't give them the luxury of being able to say it, can you be sure that the issue of class will be visible to everyone? And is it important that it's visible? We know it's we know it's there. I see it in everything, right? You made that point. So if we are being true to our more contemporary lens, and I don't necessarily mean contemporizing the play. This is the funny, you know, middle ground, you know. It gets fuzzy, and we kind of got to decide which fuzz we want to live with, and which we don't, you know.
Yeah. Ask two questions.
Sure.
They came up while we were doing this. One is, how big of a deal would homosexuality be in this play? So,
mm-hmm.
for instance, when Iago tells Othello that he was lying with Cassio, how big of a
right there. I was like, oh yeah, they were just
like how
this
big
is something we do. I thought about that. I was like, oh yeah, we
right, know. but is that like, is that a confession? Is that like, oh, we were just napping together because we're buddies? Or like, does it carry like obviously a false one, but a carried shame of like, I'm gonna tell you the darkest thing in my soul, like, and I was lying with Cassio, and he, you know, he apparently he's, you know, AC Deucey and switches both ways, and this is what he said, like, you know what I mean, like how much of that is loaded into this play? And then the other question I had is like, did Othello convert to Christianity from Islam?
Do you want my answers?
Yes, please. Please.
Working backwards, I think we have to remember that Othello is a man through Shakespeare's lens, only through Shakespeare's lens, right? And so we have to, or at least I have to, start to look at him as a man through mine, right? What Shakespeare knew about a character like Othello is that he would naturally lament not being like everybody else, not being white like the society that's around him. So he ends up saying things like, ah, maybe because I'm black, yeah, that kind of sucks, you know. Yeah, through Shakespeare's lens and all of his contemporaries, they would think, sure, he's a poor guy, you know. He's a great guy, but, you know, he'd much rather be white. And similarly, I think he probably came up with the idea that this is a converted Christian, which he very well might be. But I think as a soldier selling himself to a Christian society,
right,
he's learned the language.
Right.
Right?
He's switched that code.
Yeah. Right. He's got that figured out. Now, all of this is in the context of a Christian culture. All of them are talking about Christianity. Desdemona talks about it, Brabantio talks about it. Everybody.
And Othello's relationship with getting Desdemona to confess her sins before she dies is a very Christian.
Yeah, I find it all very, 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 very problematic that it's so heavily interlaced in the play. I would like to explore him not leaning so heavily on it. Mm. So, you know, he doesn't in the opening scene say, you know, and as justly as I confess my sins to heaven, I will, you know. So I'm just going to tell you a story. You know, he doesn't always go into that shit unless he needs to. And I think when he does, it's because he knows what they want to hear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm up in the air about it. It's a problem. It's a problem because Shakespeare wrote this guy that he knew nothing about.
Sure. You know? But the society within which this exists would have been a lot more religious than our
absolutely
society, right? Like we would have been fervent Catholics that we would have known like an Amish church, like which one of us was not in church on Sunday, which one of us was not at Mass on Wednesday. Like that would have been, I think, a hugely dominant part of our lives, wouldn't it?
I think so. But again, you know, we have to figure out what's going to tell our story and what's going to obscure it.
Yeah.
If you get too deep into the weeds in any of these issues, you know, as which is to say, making everything a point, making sure people see,
right,
you know, then you have, you know, then these are important things to talk about,
figure out,
decide what we're going to leave behind, decide what we're going to drive forward with, you know, what is the salient point, what is the issue here. The Christianity is a thing, it's there, you can't remove it altogether, what would be the point? But I think you can make a case for Othello playing Christianity because he, in the play as written, he talks about his, you know, Christianity, and then he goes into this thing about, talks about some pagan ritual with the handkerchief, right? And it's the first glimpse we have of family,
right,
you know, that is not rooted in anything Islam or Christian, right? So there's some third thing, you know, that he's involved in. Yes, he curses the Turks because they're Muslim. He's really, you know, his God is you know, him, his money. You know, I'm gonna go where they pay me the most to kick ass, right?
Yeah.
If the Turks paid him more, he'd be doing that.
Yeah.
You know.
because I think that's what these guys do, and I think that's that makes the most interesting character. You know, Harold Bloom talks about Iago worshiping Othello as the god of war until he is cast down by that god, and no longer loves him, no longer worships him. You know, it's a whole that gets deep into his Bloom's pedagogy and the weeds. But
you're like, no,
I'm not doing it. Oh Jesus!
But there was another point. What was the
homosexuality?
So people seem to like to impose that on this play. People like to take that line and have it mean a thing that I don't think it means. I believe that Shakespeare was saying we bunked together. Mm-hmm. This is where we slept. You know, you got barracks and we were in there together. You know, and I slept next to him. I don't know why you would obscure the story by creating a story of how, you know, Iago and Cassio are bisexual doing.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it as like when we were in the field, like it's not a big deal. Like when we were in the field for 3 months.
Sure, it's like being on a submarine or something.
Yeah, just
like whatever. Exactly.
What's not a big deal?
The sleeping with your fellow soldier.
You having sex with them?
Yeah.
I find that odd. You can convince me. I perhaps can be convinced. I don't see why you would bring that up. Why you would make that?
I'm not saying bring it up. I'm just saying just in that it just didn't seem like it was.
Yeah, I would say the only reason why it would be credible to bring it up as a false admission is it lends it more credence. If this is something that you're pulling out of my soul, and I'm like, God, I'm so ashamed to tell you this, but it lends the weight of truth to the story that would otherwise not be there.
They do distinguish, though, the way that we do. Back in the day, they were more like the Greeks. They didn't have a word for homosexuality.
Yeah.
And it was considered just kind of fine.
Right.
It was like a woman would be better, but a boy will do, so whatever.
When he tells me that story, I've always taken it to heart because of that. Because it's not like, oh, yeah. So, you know, he's telling me the story, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I've slept with, you know, with whomever. You know, some of my soldiers, he slept with some of the soldiers, Cassio has. So that when he tells me the story, I'm listening to the story. It's not surprising to me that that Cassio, you know, was snuggled up next to him. I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's what we do sometimes. And that's how I took it. I didn't think we needed to explain. I guess that was just for me to be like, oh, that's why I believe his story.
But I do take the point, though, in terms of like Iago's ongoing psychological warfare. That even if it's not like this deeply shameful admission, if it's embarrassing to have to recount that, it lends a sheen of truth to what he's saying, because why would he embarrass himself to say something that was untrue? So then it must be true, because why would he humiliate himself to say this thing?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, whether it's rare or common, it's still provides a sense of closeness, and that I feel like all the time I need there to be a true like brother in arms, like closeness and intimacy for any of this to even almost work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess to me, like whether it's strictly between Iago and Cassio or if it's a common practice, it always hit me as like, oh, they're closer than like I've been acknowledging up until I realized this aspect of the relationship or the conversations or
I guess the simplest way to say it, I just wonder if there are stakes in saying it differently rather than saying I heard this from across the room.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't necessarily imply, I just don't know what the rules of the world are. Like if I mention that in this room I would assume that would be a very different conversation than 1601 in Venice. And I just wonder what, like, or 1601 in England, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder what that difference would be. And like, how an audience then would have heard that as opposed to any other time.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have an answer. I don't believe, I mean, you have convinced me that they made no distinction
between heterosexual sex and homosexual sex, that it was all interchangeable. I don't buy that. You have to actually show me that. But that only speaks to your point that if they were doing something, that it would be a sense of shame with which he was divulging it, which would lend it credence.
Right.
You know, again, is that something that is so fuzzy in our portrayal of it to a contemporary audience that it starts to obfuscate more important matters, or I don't know. It's something we have to sort out. But
that does remind me of something that stood out to me just this time, was the Desdemona being there, and how much it changed the way that they all functioned.
Mm.
Even from Cassio never actually going to Othello, because now he can go through Desdemona, and like there are all these new strategies and like ways of engaging. That I wonder what it was when it was just them and there wasn't a go-between. The general didn't have a general. And it seems like a lot of all of the machinations and everything really worked because of all the go-betweens.
Mm-hmm.
And even that conversation about what they've been doing in the barracks together seems to stand out to me when I think more and more about the fact that, oh, there's an entirely new structure to the squad in their relationships.
We are almost at time. We have 4 minutes. I'm going to turn this off.